This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, October 15th, 2008.
Okay, I want to call the meeting to order. And make sure everybody signs in, please. I think Alex needs to. And let's start off with the reports from the constituent assemblies.
Well, concerning roll call, we have a quorum.
Yes.
So if we want to start with the student assembly, David.
All right, I guess we didn't meet last year, so for those of you who don't know me, I guess I'll be getting out of the 42nd.
And mention your names, too, please, for the...
My name is Chris Basil, I'm the Executive Vice President of the Student Assembly, and I'm a junior. We did not meet last Thursday, just fall break. The previous Thursday, as you may have noticed in the sun, we hosted an Amethyst Initiative, which I guess you guys are talking about, an Amethyst Initiative panel, which consisted of, I think, six or seven administrators and professors. I know that Alex and Mark were both there. It was really interesting because a lot of them were opposed to the Amethyst Initiative, or at least opposed to lowering the drinking age for a variety of reasons, which I guess you guys will probably talk about more later. But that's one big thing the SA is sort of considering right now, how we want to approach the issue. Because, I mean, I think the face value, everyone would recognize that probably, you know, 95% of undergraduates would you know, like drinking age to be 18. But obviously, it's not that simple. So that's something the SA is sort of in the process of deciding how to approach. Other big things that we're working on, which we're also talking about, academic integrity. In addition to that, we are looking at changing around a lot of our finance rules for SAC and for bond funding. And then there are a number of smaller initiatives and a lot of ongoing things, too. For example, the Cornell Review and all that stuff. So. That's, I guess,
you're doing
the background. You want me to just
start
with
Cornell Review?
I mean, just anything that we're doing.
I mean, we have a number of smaller things that different representatives have taken on by themselves. I know some people are working on transportation initiatives and working on getting free bus passes for all undergraduates. The Cornell Review resolution dealt with revising our campus code of conduct and creating a committee to deal with racial tensions on campus. And
deal with what?
I guess
racial tensions on campus.
And one last thing, I guess we just had a report 2 weeks ago at our last meeting on this group of students that are starting this program called Big Red Bikes, and this would be a bike sharing program. Basically, how it would work, it's sort of like a vending machine. There would be stations across campus, you know, North Campus, Central Campus, College Town, and you would swipe your card, you'd get a bike for 24 hours. So this would basically encourage, you know, reduced driving. This is sort of a sustainability initiative. But basically, the way it would work is it would require startup costs of, I think, I want to say $14,000. And from then on, they would run it as a nonprofit. They would charge either, you know, a monthly, one-time use, semester subscription fee for students, you know, but obviously be affordable, and that would maintain the program. So, again, startup fees, I think, cost of about $14,000. And I guess as a student assembly, we're looking to at least partially support that. We don't have $15,000 extra dollars in our budget, obviously, but we'll be able to at least provide partial support for the program where we are right now in terms of our finances. Yeah.
Any chance when should approach the transportation department?
Yeah, as far as I understand, the transportation department has been receptive to the idea. This is an idea in terms of bike sharing that's been tried in a lot of major cities. DC just started up a big bike sharing program.
Yeah.
This is not, you know, a radical idea. This is a radical idea, as for example, the pod car idea that you've heard of. So I think the administration has been very receptive. Risk management, everything has already been, you know, consulted and thought through. I think that the other big student assembly initiative, I'm not sure if you guys are aware of, is ZimRide. What it is basically is a carpool program. Right now, the university has some sort of system to link up drivers with passengers, so that you know people can carpool.
Car sharing.
But it's basically from the people who've used it. It's a very bad system. It's a poor website design. And really very few students use it. In contrast, Zimride is a program that right now is run through Facebook, but they're looking to, it's accessible to current students through Facebook, but Zimride is looking to really expand their services and broaden the Cornell, and they would charge the university, I think I want to say $7,500 per year for the service. Cornell right now pays a different company a similar amount of money for the current service that they use. But the quality of service is vastly inferior to Zimride. So the administration has been resistant to consider switching. Again, I'm not sure why the other representatives there headline exists, but that's another initiative that SA is working on, is getting the administration to sort of back off on the Zimride.
As well as Safe Ride, too.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's a program where we would subsidize cab rides for students on weekends.
No, there would actually be a bus, a Safe Ride bus.
Oh, I thought we were working with cab rides.
Excuse me.
Well, either way, and it's to prevent drunk driving.
About the bicycle and the Zim Ride or whatever system, could this be dovetailed with the need for more bike stations around campus? And pressed through our transportation committee.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is, as a not just student assembly, although that's certainly a powerful agency, but you know, something that the UA, with its four different constituencies, would like to see. And it's not just students swiping the cards, but also employees and staff.
I think the issues between bike racks and Big Red Bikes are definitely related, but I feel like with Big Red Bikes, they basically have a business plan, all set. They thought out, all their finances and everything they need. They're going to go ahead and purchase additional bike racks for the Big Red Bikes program, or supplement the bike racks that we currently have. And so basically all they need from us is startup finances. Then we're going to help arrange through other sources and through the SA. So I think that what you're talking about in terms of bike racks and improving bike safety on campus, for students that have bikes, is our parallel agendas, basically.
Well, yeah. So are you thinking only then for Big Red Bikes? Is that thinking only about student bikes?
Well, I don't know what your guys' finances are like, but I mean, the Student Assembly has right now, because Ari wrote a program that reduced our elections costs, we have a relatively large surplus in our budget, not $14,000, but we will be able to probably provide some on the order of 50% of their funding that they need. The reason that I'm bringing it up is I think that it's important for all constituent bodies in the university to be aware of this program, because obviously we don't just want the graduates to participate. But the problem for Big Red Bikes is one of financing. That's basically their only obstacle at this point. Whereas for Zimride, it's a problem with administration and, agreement. So that's something that I think the UA, in conjunction with the other assemblies, could help spearhead.
So you're saying that employee staff members, faculty members, could go to these same stations, swipe their cards, their ID cards?
I don't see why not.
Well, I mean, there are different pools of numbers.
Yes.
So it would have to be something.
Well, it's a system that the way they explained it to us, that you would have had to sign up for in advance. It's not like, the newspaper system where anyone could just go swipe a card. You would have had to have purchased or registered with Big Red Bikes as an organization, either a subscription fee or register sort of a one-time use policy, because you get to sign, legal release forms if you crash your bike and injure yourself. So there's a lot of, it's not like you could just spontaneously decide that you want to take a bicycle class one day. Something that you would have had to have.
There's another model that does that, in around the Netherlands or other places that have bicycles available to just get on a day by day basis.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I might work in the Netherlands, but we do live in a pretty litigious society, so I mean, I feel like liability, if all the liability issues,
I see.
We need to probably take a more cautious approach. Yeah.
It's something that
good idea to start small with these things and then expand them later. So starting with students might be a good idea for them.
Yeah. Well,
then expanding out with it.
Exactly. That's what Big Red Bikes is doing. They're buying, I think, I want to say 40 bikes to begin the program, where it's large enough to build a sustainable network. But in the long run, they're looking to obviously expand that network to be bigger because, you know, 40 bikes, 15,000 students, you know. So, exactly.
To add my consistent suggestion, which is that it's really important to have covered bike racks. If you can put these racks under, there are a lot of existing buildings like Uris, the Johnson Museum is a wonderful, huge roof stuff and nothing. If you could put racks there, because, you know, if you bike, it rains or snows, there's so much around here. People need a place where they can cover the bike, they can use this, you know, all iced up when they come to get on it. So if you can get covered spaces, and I really think they exist already. It's just a matter of using those that are already there.
I'll suggest that to the group bike myself, too.
Is that it, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay. GPSA?
At our last meeting on October 6th, the council representative meeting, we talked a little bit about our new events chair. We have a new events chair. We had updates from our advocacy committee. They're having their first planning meeting on October 20th. We're having a lot of grad events coming up in the next month or two, which is great for us. I'm really excited to have a lot more activity on the events and getting grads together as part of the Graduate Community Initiative, bringing us all together from across the different departments. We communicated what we had spoken about in the last University Assembly meeting regarding the update from Child Care Services. And then we had a presentation from Mike Walsh on the President's Climate Neutrality Committee, which I know we'll be discussing here later in the year. We also had a presentation from Richard Keeley, is that his last name? From the Center for Teaching Excellence, and that was the bulk of our meeting right there. He did a really wonderful presentation on the new TA training program that they have going on. And he shared with us a number of different ideas that the Center for Teaching Excellence has on their agenda in working with graduate students in mentorship and helping us develop professional portfolios. They were talking about having a certificate in teaching, a master's teaching workshop, which would provide graduate students with a certificate in teaching. Career services, et cetera, et cetera. And that was a really wonderful presentation for us to know that such a thing is being discussed and that such a thing is on the minds of folks in the dean's offices and the Center for Teaching Excellence in helping us be better prepared when we go on the professional market and helping us prepare teaching statements and research statements. They're very open to feedback from graduate students, and that was a really positive thing. A very quick summary of what we discussed. Any questions? We're having our next assembly meeting on this coming Monday, so we haven't had that agenda discussed yet. We'll follow up with you next time.
Okay. EA?
We just had our most recent meeting today. And we're focused on the President's address and the energy fair that's going to be 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday, October 27th, in Barton Hall, that's open to everybody to attend. The President's address is going to be at 12:15, and the energy fair portion of it is focused with vendors both on campus and off campus, and it's focused on how we can use our energy wisely at home, in our apartment. So it's focused more on the personal use of energy in our cars and everything else. So that is what we have been working on.
Did you say persons who are talking on Monday?
Monday, October 27th at 12:15.
That's the State and University address.
No, this is an address that he gives to the employee assembly.
Okay. It's not talking about energy. He's not talking about energy.
Well, his speech will be related to energy because of the energy fair that's happening at the same sure. time. Yeah.
Is there going to be a meeting at this fair about saving energy in buildings on campus?
There's going to be a sustainability fair.
The
22nd. That's going to focus on Cornell and saving energy in the workplace, where this one is going to focus on saving energy where we live instead of where we work.
It seems to be something that could be combined with employees. They could give people, all employees, incentives to suggest ways of conserving energy. I wish that, you know, say building managers had this kind of thing in mind, because being in a building, and I also in a building where it's isolated all the time because it's so difficult to turn off. And I often go around and go back to my office late at night, turning off all the lights because nobody can figure out how to turn them off. What they need is motion sensitivity. And I know that's a big investment, but they've got lights blazing all the time, and then it's really hot, and you work in every building on this day, because even the Loretta lights, which some of them are, it's wasting a lot of energy like that, and I wish the university would have been to it. Maybe if they gave us incentives to report it, or if they rewired buildings to make motion sensitivity.
Yeah, I think that's gonna. Well, go ahead.
Sustainability Fair is talking about alternative energy development and also local foods and green building practices, and it's in Wild Hall from 10 to 2. There's an open house. But I'm on the sustainability team in my building, Seneca Place downtown, which is where Alumni Fair Development is, and I do talk to Dean pretty frequently. And there are little sustainability talks, because at Cornell everything has to be site by site, and you have to look at each site individually. So we've been working with our building management to talk about that very same thing, installing motion sensors. And what I'm trying to do with Dean is to create a venue, perhaps even an online community, where people can share best practices across the university as far as, you know, what works in Golden Smith, what works, you know, in Willard Smith. On campus,
I
think
that's more of a different,
Dean Koinati, the University Sustainability Coordinator.
So there's actually just one person who's tasked with implementing all sorts of sustainability initiatives, from the large-scale building and energy issues to food and, you know, materials and so on. It's a big job.
So that's the sustainability fair. We'll take care of that.
I'm actually glad this was brought up, because we decided November 12th we're going to dedicate the entire meeting to discuss these topics and to invite the necessary people to kind of figure out where we are with that. You know what I mean? Schools do we have that?
And faculty.
Well, we had the president of the university give a report to us at our last Senate meeting, and the Senate meeting is occurring right now at the same time as this meeting. So, and I know that the interim provost will be speaking at that, and he spoke at the last meeting as well, and our new dean faculty spoke at the last meeting. The president's address covered a lot of interesting matters. That the university is still solvent, and it raised quite a bit of money last year, but who knows about this year, towards its goal of many billions of dollars endowment. And they had a budget sort of emergency, I guess, meeting session. I wouldn't call it an emergency. He didn't call it an emergency, but a session to discuss, you know, what dire circumstances might mean for the university. They had a planning group that got together. I don't know whether any people here were on that, but it was a body convened by the president, including a number of deans and the CFO and other people, and they discussed sort of various plans that might be implemented to deal with major decline in revenues. They haven't yet issued a report about what might be done should there be such a thing that occurred. And I understand something was going to be issued from this current Senate meeting, but it was going to be a short version, and the long version was going to be on the internet. I think it may be already. That's the main matter. Some people did. There were several questions about sustainability raised at the meeting, the Senate meeting, and there was generally the president gave a very rosy view of how the university is adjusting to energy issues, including local foods questions, and trying to do Cornell Dining and some transportation initiatives and things of that sort. It's just a spot check of his talk to us. I think the whole thing is on the internet, but I guess you could say that questions were a question was raised about whether it is going along at as fast a pace as it could, or whether more speedy kind of adjustments to energy containment of energy use and so forth might be implemented. There's this new natural gas initiative. I don't know if you folks know about it, where a good portion of the heating and cooling of the university will be done by natural gas now, and cut down on carbon emissions. And there's also a burning of trash and other things for the generation of energy that's going to go on at the heating plant, which is going to decrease energy consumption and coal consumption. That's a good one. Yes.
Has there been any thought in the design and all these new buildings, these glass domes?
That was one of the things that was, one of the related questions. A question that was related somewhat to that came up, and there was, I may be confusing one meeting with another, but there was some statement that that LEED certification and these other, some of these things have to be implemented rather slowly because the costs are prohibitively high, and it may be it's difficult to implement these sustainable practices without getting an incremental percentage more of the of the money for the building costs.
But for buildings that haven't been built yet, that are just in the design stage.
I might be able to put a little input on that, actually. So at GPSA, when we got an update, I forget the guy's name now, it was mentioned by both Mike Walsh and this other guy, that I believe the number is $5 million. So any campus building or remodeling over $5 million must meet LEED Silver plus 20 or 30% efficiency. So they are taking all this into account, and even though, like, you look at Weill Hall, there's giant plate glass windows, it's an extremely efficient building. It's LEED Gold, yeah.
What about Millstein? I read something that was circulated on the internet from that really helps design
the most
energy efficient
in the world. I mean, according to what we were presented with, there is an extremely high standard that Cornell has set for itself to meet, and the amount of planning that's by the amount of construction that's
currently happening and in the process of planning. The LEED certification amounts to, I think, 80 or 75% of all of that. So it's a very significant portion of what we're looking at in the future. I'm sorry I can't be more exact. It was part of the presentation. So.
Yeah.
I think it was during the employee assembly had a retreat in the summer, and we invited the Cornell architect to give a presentation on the status of design, construction, and everything on campus. So I'm just forgetting his name. Is it Richard Kiefer?
No, Fogato?
Kiefer. Kiefer. Oh. I think we should invite him so we can get an update from the source of what's going on campus with all of the building and construction.
He might be a good person for the leadership and then eventually for this, too. Well, when I was saying silver sustainability and so forth, I was thinking that the university could, for example, shoot higher, like with wire that shot for gold. And glass is not, actually glass can be more energy efficient than some other surfaces. It depends on what you do with the filters on it and things of that.
What they're doing is they're aiming for silver plus 30%.
Yeah.
And what often happens is when you're at least aiming for silver and then you're incorporating that extra 30%, like what happened with the gold certified building, you end up there anyway. So that's what they're doing as a common practice as they go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And as the buildings get, as they are completed, we probably see more gold certified evaluations come up.
Yeah, other places are shooting for platinum with that.
Okay. Let's do the minutes from last meeting.
Oh, just so will Kiefer be invited to one of our meetings?
Yes, we can work on that.
Okay.
For the climate neutrality and sustainability.
Yes.
That would work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Dean.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody like to move the minutes?
Can I raise one more question? Just in case we have this discussion. But one major concern that I have is because of the financial crisis, a lot of families will not be able to send their students. What is Cornell doing there to try to make education more affordable by increasing financial aid, work studies, all of that? Because it's going to be a problem across the country for the middle class families who are going to get to college.
They're already working on that because I was in a meeting this morning to discuss that.
Are we doing late additions to the agenda?
We're going
to
continue.
Okay, well, the reason I ask is that we could bring that up as an item for discussion.
We might be running out of time in this meeting, but could you actually send me an email with just exactly what you just said and then make sure that it's properly written?
Anybody want to move the minutes?
I move to approve the minutes.
By Kate. Seconded by Mark. All in favor? It's unanimous. Does anyone have anything major from the committees that really we need to know about?
We're just going to have a little. Randy probably would like to say a little bit about where we are with the PeopleSoft committee and so forth. Literally, take 2 minutes toward the end of the meeting. That's just dedicated to that. But then, the committee would consider PeopleSoft.
I see.
For a small level.
That's going on in business today?
That'll be the last item. It'll take 2 minutes. Just as we'll be hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Any other? Nothing? Okay. You want to go into Charter Review Committee dialogue?
To address kind of the first item that we had there, brief reports of committees, if you hold a liaison position, could you please send either Rodney or myself an email saying what you have done with that liaison position thus far, who you've been in contact with, if you've set up any meetings, just so we're trying to get an idea of what's going on.
Who's in transportation liaison?
I am.
Have they met
Yeah, we're meeting on the 24th, and the issue is bike safety and accessibility.
Okay.
So I took notes from what he was saying.
Bike safety and accessibility for bikes.
Bike, yes, correct.
And that means existing bikes as well as this bike program?
I'm going to bring that up. This is the first that I'm aware of that, so I'm going to bring that up then, definitely. So we're supposedly going to hear from campus experts. I'm in the process of getting, yeah, if there are any. I'm in the process of getting some information from people who I know bike around campus, and their encounters and what they, like as an experienced user of bikes on campus, what they would enjoy to see. So.
I'm sure you guys have looked at this, but I just did a quick search for big red bikes in the on the internet, and I came up with big red bikes, get rolling. It's a daily bicycle lending program free to Western Kentucky University visitors, students, faculty, and staff. That's University of Kentucky, Western Kentucky. What I guess I'm getting at is that we could, you know, not just go with, and by the way, they're not bikes with 20 gears. They're just simple, you know, pedal it along, you got it on the flat, so nobody can take them up, for example, to the Newman Research Center on top of Snyder Hill very easily, at least. The point is that they're just to get around campus. So one could look at it, what other campuses are doing, and just be a little bit more proactive in getting this going, perhaps for the whole campus.
Yeah, I think this has been an issue totally neglected on campus. So it's something that I've been pressing and stuff about. So we'll do that on the 24th.
Thanks. How about the planning committee? Who's the liaison to that?
It's going to be Friday, the first time.
And as for CJC, we got our full roster today. We had some trouble with communication from different assemblies with who the representatives were, but when I talked to Kathleen earlier, I think she received employee representatives. Is that correct? Did you guys designate representatives?
If we did, it wasn't done at today's meeting. I don't recall that. We're so focused on this, the president's address and the energy fair. But Amy, can you help us out?
Say that again.
When I talked to Kathleen today, she said we finally had a full committee for CJC.
Okay.
I
don't know of any employee representative that was designated to be on that committee.
All it took was the afternoon. But as of right now, our tentative first meeting will be next week.
Okay.
Or then the week, hopefully.
Good. Can we move on to charter review? We've been saying this for like the last 2 years that I can remember. Well, there you go. That our charter is out of date and needs to be revamped and re-looked at. So what we thought we'd do is set up an ad hoc committee to go over the charter and suggest recommendations of changes. And if we're going to change certain setups to certain committees, do it that way. And hoping to have this done by
January
2011
I would hope that whatever is come up with will be very similar to the final draft with tweaks perhaps, but maybe for at least a first draft by the 28th.
And we would like some two or three people to volunteer for that.
I won't, but Jim Blair mentioned in conversation that he'd be interested in that, so you may.
I can ask him.
Jim Blair's now.
I can ask him.
You know, if he rejects now that Randy, you have to take the.
It's actually in the notes.
We are in the process of going under charter review for the employee assembly, and I'm on that committee, so I would also volunteer to be on this one with Kate and other people.
Anybody else really dying for that?
Do you have a plan for what you're going to do at the charter review meetings and when how often they occur, and whether they're virtual or real?
I have no suggestions other than the people need to know that we would like to a draft of it by the 28th.
A draft of a revised charter?
Yeah. Do you have suggestions?
And he's talking, Marty, 2010.
Well, I mean...
Because what we've come up with is the fact that the committees aren't set up or aren't working the way that we have them defined. And that's been the main sticking point with us, I think, that we want to clean up.
I see. So you're only thinking of looking at the committee section, or are you thinking of looking at it from top to bottom?
I think we need to definitely look at the committee section first.
Okay, so you want to have one initial meeting and then talk about what charter. Okay, and then by the 28th, what do you want to have, a final version?
A draft.
A draft, yes.
A first draft.
That will be debated here, hopefully, just
28th
of general.
January.
All right, I can do something for a first meeting. I'd be interested to join in for our first meeting to discuss what's going to be done.
Okay.
The process to establish the
process.
And that would be great because you have a lot of institutional and historical knowledge.
I've been here only 6 months. Okay. Good, fine. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Okay. Do you want to take the next one?
So, Chris, if you could give us a report now on the current state of the Academic Integrity Drafting Committee.
Yeah. So basically, it's actually very interesting to me. We had a first sort of introductory meeting about 3 weeks ago now, maybe a month ago. I lost track of time. But what really came out of this meeting was the scope of the problem, where when we started to actually think about where we're going from here, i.e., the basically sort of a background for this year on the UA last year, we informed a committee to consider academic integrity last spring, where we really thought about what we have right now and whether or not that was adequate for Cornell's needs. And if it wasn't, which we determined it wasn't, in what direction did we want to go? Ultimately, out of that committee really came the idea that we wanted to pursue an honor code. What we decided then was actually form a drafting committee that would, in effect, consider different options for basically how an honor code would work at Cornell. What we did was, in our first meeting, we talked about the current structure of academic integrity and the current enforcement rules, and the fact that basically, as the current system is now, each college is in effect a silo. They operate entirely independently. All of the academic integrity committees have no executive board, so they basically operate in anarchy. There's no leadership structure, and the boards have never once in recent memory met with each other. So really first what we're looking at in light of all these problems is sort of starting to reform the structural integrity of the academic integrity hearing boards. And then from there, once we have some sort of cogent universal structure, then examining and reforming the actual code itself. So what we're looking to do is sort of a two-step process. One, we reform the actual system, and two, we then take the system and re-examine the code. So what K-Duke, Sanjeev, Sada, and myself are going with Dean Fry to a first ever meeting of all the academic integrity hearing committee faculty chairs. Feels a little bit like the meeting of five families, but we're going to meet these guys for the first time, and we're going to basically sort of pitch the idea that they need to start working together. So we'll have to see how well it's received. As far as my understanding of all the situation is, by and large, faculty members that serve in these committees are individuals who have served for a number of years. I'm talking, 5-10 years on this committee. So these are individuals that have a very vested interest in justice and punishment and in their own positions. So we have yet to see how flexible they're going to be in reconsidering different ideas, but I guess we'll let the report back after that meeting, which is either scheduled for, I want to say, the 29th of October, maybe the 1st of November. There's a couple tentative dates that have been set. Final date hasn't been picked. But we're basically going to sort of give a PowerPoint presentation about, you know, our vision for the academic integrity hearing boards to all these faculty chairs, the different hearing boards, and then really hear what they have to say. So,
are all seven undergraduate colleges going to be there?
I believe so, yes. That's the current plan. The seven families.
There was, I don't know if it was 3 or 4 years ago, when President Lehman was here, and he came to a UA meeting because he was very concerned about academic integrity. So there was some work done on this already. I don't know what happened to it. Do you remember?
Integrity, yes.
A former UA member has collected quite a bit of information and looking at best practices at other universities, but it's not just Cornell.
Yeah.
Some schools have a lot of stuff already established, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, that's what we were doing last spring, was looking at
the two schools,
UVA and University of Colorado.
Did you look at Princeton as well?
We did not look at Princeton, I don't think.
Okay. But there's a number of schools. I don't remember all of them, but there was a lot of information collected. So Henry Granison is the... as Wayne remembers, is the person who may still have some information, or if not, he would be good to talk to.
Okay. I'll get in contact with him.
And then the only other thing that I can think of is also a few years ago, ABC Television did a special on cheating in the United States and high schools and colleges, and Cornell was featured in that. So you might want to get a hold of that video. But it's not just Cornell, all the universities.
Yeah, I mean, for those of you who read the Times, there's actually a Times op-ed about a week ago about cheating in high school that said straight up in one of the paragraphs, you know, it's been shown in studies that high schools and colleges that have an honor code tend to have, it's at high schools as well as like, full corporations that have some sort of honor code or code of integrity, have employees or students that value integrity more, through surveys, et cetera. But so I think, you know, the simple fact of us having our code will have positive effects. So, yeah, no.
And President Lehman was trying to fold that into the revision of the campus code of conduct, if I remember correct. Yeah. That's when it originally came up.
Well, it was proposed.
Yeah.
It was proposed, yes.
But then when the revision was commissioned, of the campus code, that was pulled out because it was thought to be for one thing, academic integrity is administered for the most part by college, and the campus code was a university-wide one. Have you discussed that much? Can't the campus code, integrity, how the sort of university-wide integrity issue would be implemented in individual colleges?
Well, that's what we're saying, is that it's very interesting because Sanjeev pointed to one case last semester where it was an arts and sciences student who cheated in an engineering class, and the engineering standard of evidence for conviction is different than the arts and sciences standard of conviction for evidence. So there was a huge disagreement between the two boards over who wanted to try the case, and evidently the deans got involved, and it's such a sticky situation because there's no unity. There is a lot of ego, it seems, involved with a lot of these different organizations.
So different organizations, you mean different colleges?
Different hearing committees. So they really function as different organizations, different rules. And again, a lot of the rules really aren't even written down. It's a lot of sort of institutional memory, a lot of case by case judgment, and that's something that we're going to want to focus on. Is first, I guess, bringing everyone together and talking at this meeting and seeing whether everyone is in favor of this idea, and really going from there. Because I think that we really right now don't even have any sort of base point to reference from in terms of how this thing is going to go. Nothing like this has really been tried in a number of years. I mean, maybe something like this was tried 3 years ago, but this is certainly before, like, this freshman year, I don't know. But this might have been the year before I was around. So since I've been here, nothing like this has been tried. So
I'm sorry, you may have covered this, and I apologize because I'm annoying. Wondered, it wasn't email, it was something having to do with the UA. But did you talk, the Dean of Faculty was a very important part, member of this.
Dean Walcott was
yes,
the one who started the committee that we were originally on.
I know. So is the new Dean of Faculty deeply involved in this?
Yes, he's the one who's helping us set up this meeting and bringing all the heads of the boards together. So he's going to chair this meeting, and Kate, Sanjeev, and I are going to do the presentation to the Dean, or to the committee heads.
Because I would think one agency that rules over the all of the colleges together would be the Senate, and the Dean of Faculty can be the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a way of trying to get a university-wide some kinds of standards in place university-wide, even though they'd be probably administered always by the individual colleges.
We're not speaking of this now, but obviously the ultimate goal is to have a student-run system. We first need to see how amenable, again, the fact that a lot of these, the faculty heads of these different committees, the different hearing committees, have been part of these organizations for 5-10 years. We need to sort of see how deeply entrenched they are with their own institutions before we can talk about change. The campaign of change.
Who's sponsoring the idea that it should be a student run faculty?
Every other university that has an honor code is a student run honor code. I think that it sets a moral tone to other students when your students trying cases.
Oh, trying cases, yeah.
Student judges, student everything student run. Yeah.
So would this be like university hearing board type thing?
Yeah, it would be like university hearing boards.
Well, of course, they have non students on it. They have faculty.
Yeah. It would be similar in the structure, but it would be all students.
I'm sorry, wait. Oh, yeah.
What were you saying, Mark?
No, because I remember we had an original discussion that this might have changed since then, and we had envisioned something along the lines of a student majority with a support system of faculty.
And that's the other thing, is that any sort of academic integrity structure is obviously needed in an advising system.
Yeah.
The faculty could maintain, you know, very close ties to the organization, but it's my personal belief, and ultimately the committee may decide otherwise, but that all decisions should be made by students against other students, because that really sets the moral tone. So that's my personal opinion.
And in arts and sciences, I know they have students on that.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, and Sanjeev is on the committee in arts and sciences, and he's the one helping us give the presentation because he has all the first-hand information.
But of course, all of the findings are by faculty in the sense that you don't get a case from another student.
No, absolutely. Which is because there's no honor code. So.
I see.
There really is nothing in codified right now to encourage students to turn other students in. You know, certain classes that I've been in, the faculty has said, you know, if you see another student cheating, I'd appreciate it if you would let me know. But there, in a formal honor code, usually, not always, but usually there's some sort of language that either encourages or requires students to turn in other students if they make a violation of the code. Yeah. It's your duty in the UVA code. I'm not sure how the University of Colorado code is written, I forget. But if you do not turn, if you witness an infraction and you don't turn the student in, you yourself are guilty of an infraction of the UVA system.
How do they enforce that?
I don't know how something like that would end up being tried, but that's what's written. Yeah.
On the positive side, I think because the students are truly the people that are wrong when somebody cheats, it's a great idea to have a student. And then from the position of teaching classes or a class where people have cheated, it's very difficult to, you know, sometimes they just come clean. But if they don't come clean, you never actually really know.
And that's a huge responsibility to put on a student to, if they're not sure. I mean, if you see somebody's head go like this, but the head just went like this, they were cheating. And so I don't know. I think there needs to be some balance.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
I mean, that's the important thing also that we got into this committee last spring, was the fact that under the current system, you know, you as faculty members are responsible for the entire process of trying a student. So it's your responsibility to, you know, show up to a meeting, testify. It's entirely up to you whether or not to actually bring charges against the student in the first place. So that's one of the real problems with the code that we currently saw, is that punishment responsibility is so ambiguous based on, you know, circumstances, that students really have no clear set of understanding about what will happen to them. It's very class by class. And based on the teacher's mood, even almost. So, you know, I feel like an honor code would really sort of set in stone what's expected of students and faculty alike.
So how would you put the threshold in? Like if somebody just, like I said, somebody sees somebody's head go like that.
I mean, I think that as a faculty member, if you witnessed it, it would be your responsibility to at least, you know, bring it up with the student.
Yeah, so I could do that, but now if somebody else witnesses it, and now it's secondhand with me bringing it up to the student.
Yeah, but I mean, again, the in an honor code, that student may have the responsibility. It depends. If you see someone go like this, you know, I'm guilty of that myself. I stare in space for, you know, minutes at a time when I'm trying to think of what to write in an essay or something like that on a test. So, I mean, I definitely understand, but I think, again, there's a sort of, I guess, minutiae that will have to be worked out, you know, at that point when we're actually making those codes. But, yeah, I think that ultimately the objective of, you know, our mission is to simplify the system, to make it universal, to make it easily understood. Because I don't know if any of you have actually seen the Academic Code of Integrity. It's a long document that nobody has ever read in the history of school. That's the person who wrote it.
I think it's important to emphasize the whole idea of the building blocks. I think when we're talking about, you know, students responsible and when others happen for it, they spoke about, oh, we have to turn people in, or the whole idea of every year they have a whole school meeting where people sort of adapt the code. And I think those sort of intricacies come really after, I guess, all the other things that we're talking about have been implemented. Like, I don't foresee, you know, student reporting or you cheated or this or that to be until maybe 5 years down the line after a student control board is worked out. So I think first, again, we should emphasize the uniting the boards, then working toward how can we turn that over to a student, you know, oversight, and then we can see how can we bring in the rest of the student body to fully bring this code to.
Yeah, that's a great point. Really quickly, to give you guys sort of a real quick timeline of what we're thinking right now, based on how this meeting in a couple weeks goes, we'll have a better idea. But in our heads, in a perfect world, we think the best way to accomplish what we're trying to do is to start any major changes at the beginning of an academic term. So what we're looking at, best case scenario, is to pursue uniting the boards for next semester. So to really sort of get everyone together under one system for next semester, under the current Academic Code of Integrity, and then working all next semester on changing the Academic Code of Integrity, and again, best case scenario, starting to implement changes to the Academic Code of Integrity next fall. So we'll see how it goes with the faculty in a couple of weeks, but that's sort of our basic timeline.
And I guess this goes without saying, really, but whatever you come up with, pass it by the Cornell lawyers, because all of you will be liable to lawsuits if a student sues. Not only will that student sue Cornell and the faculty, they'll sue you as well.
Yeah.
So be sure you're protected legally, because like you said earlier, with the Netherlands, I mean, everybody sues in this country for anything.
Yeah.
So make sure you're not left exposed to
lawsuits. I'm sure President Ford would not sign anything that was carefully reviewed by, you know, his law firm. Any system that we build is invariably going to be based on another school system. UVA has the oldest honor code in the country. It's sort of the prototypical school that anyone looking at an honor code is going to model them off of. So, but again, UVA has a one strike and you're out policy. If you get talked about cheating, the only punishment is expulsion. University of Colorado has the same structure, but they have a series of different punishments ranging from, you know, a letter of apology, probation, suspension, expulsion, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm just saying, whatever model you passed by the
panel,
so you're not left exposed.
I think that ultimately what we may end up doing is we may, I don't know how much of the actual code we're going to draft ourselves, but we may leave up to lawyers. We may, you know, in fact, sort of iterate a set of goals and expectations for the code and leave the actual language up to, you know, people to know what they're doing and that kind of thing. Yeah,
that's a good question.
Hey, Will. Thank you, Chris. Yeah. So, yeah, I'll keep you guys informed after this meeting. That's one thing that has been clear to me throughout this entire process is, you know, this is a code. This is something that's going to affect, you know, undergraduates, graduates, and faculty. It's going to affect everyone on campus because everyone's going to be responsible for reporting infractions, and you know, graduate students and undergraduates are going to be, you know, liable, responsible under the code. So it's something that could affect everyone. So we want everyone to put,
If your goal is to make a university-wide system of adjudication and penalties being equal across the processes, being equal across all of the colleges, then you might well think about, even at the, if not the first meeting, but down the line, if you convene all the boards and all the boards work together, having a Coast and Judicial Committee member participate in all of your meetings, because you might find that there are ways of eventually merging the Code of Academic Integrity with the Coast and Judicial.
That's a fishy situation. UVA has that system. Everything
I know.
Everything is encompassed under their honor code.
Right.
The student goes to a bar. This happened last semester. The student went to a bar with a fake ID, got caught, and then got expelled for committing an honor violation because lying about their age was considered, you know, you're lying. That's a much stickier situation where, you know, so what if a freshman. Alcohol amnesty, you know, I feel like there are a lot of issues that perhaps are better left up to the campus code of conduct that's separate from the academic code of integrity. That really brings up the issue of how responsible off campus are you to maintain your integrity. You know, if you go home on break and you do whatever, can you be expelled for doing that? We've amended the campus code of conduct last semester so that it applies off campus. You know, is that going to be true of the academic code of integrity too? So I think these are big questions and important questions. I definitely think that down the road, something like that might be considered, but I don't think that's going to be our objective. At least, I'm in two more years, so not while I'm here.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Yeah. Moving on to Cornell Review and the essay resolution. Asa, that's going to be you.
And I'm going to talk, broadly. Or anything. So basically, for those of you that were not aware, in the beginning of the year, Cornell Review released an article which many students took issue to. So they commented about particular groups of bodies of students or housing on campus or things of that nature. So students brought it to attention of administration, to student assembly members, and eventually what happened was one student assembly member, in conjunction with a community member, brought a resolution to the student assembly about the idea of removing Cornell's name from the Cornell Review, citing the fact that these things are harmful to the community or just the various different infractions that they felt, the student felt, was in place by having this sort of a name on a paper. And so we debated, well, first we asked questions one week, but the next week we had a debate as to, you know, what is this possible, is this valid, is this something that the university can do? There are a good amount of students in the audience who were in favor of removing the name. There are also a good amount of students that were saying, you know, this is a fraction of my free speech. People should be allowed to say the things that they want to say in the papers. And, you know, your organizations, your student, as students, you should just get over it. This is a joke or lighthearted. And so that was basically the whole debate. And it boiled down to eventually the resolution was adapted. I actually amended the resolution. And what was founded, I forget the exact name of the committee, was that there's now
a committee that is going to look at the campus code on diversity and see how that affects, if there are things that can be done to sort of help to reiterate the whole idea of open minds, open hearts, or the same thing that we find on our diversity at cornell.edu/diversity, that statement. Is there things that, should things be allowed on campus, should things be, you know, hesitant against students of our community? So that actually has been, that passed. There's contention with that idea. I actually was invited to speak on a television show in Ithaca about it, and where I was, you know, confronted with, this is a slippery slope, this is freedom of speech we're talking about, people should have the right to say what they want to say. So that's the whole debate, that's what's going on, but as far as I know, the committee has been started. I actually have not had time because of break. Things seemed as though everything was crushed together. So I do not know updates as to their progress, but I can find it out. So pretty much that's what happened. And then it's up to, I guess, students, community, faculty members, everyone to decide where do we fall. Part of the debate is that while we are a public and a private university, as a private university, we do have the right to prohibit. We do not necessarily have to fully follow the First Amendment, because we can choose things that we want to have on campus or we don't want to have on campus. That's what one, a law professor actually came to the student assembly and spoke about that is Cornell's right to do. But then again, there's a whole group of students that are saying that, you know, just because you find this offensive, what about other things that are offensive on campus? And is it right to limit our right to speak about these things if we find them offensive? Or is it right for us to voice our concerns about housing on campus or program housing specifically, or self-segregation of community members in Cornell? And so that is pretty much the debate. But it did pass the student assembly. If you have any questions, we can speak about that in debate.
What was the resolution?
So the resolution was first written so that the Cornell Review would no longer be the Cornell Review, and it would be then the Review. Students that came from the community said, by having the Cornell Review, that sort of tells students that are visiting or anyone in the community that, you know, Cornell is sponsoring these words. And by having that, this is a reflection of what the administration stands for, this is a reflection of what goes on our campus, and that can be hurtful to not only students on campus, but students that visit campus, potential students, faculty members, community members, anything.
But just for clarification, what I'm asking though is what does the resolution say that
sure.
was passed? That's all I'm asking.
Sure, let me see if I actually have a resolution.
Or is it online?
The resolution did not remove the right of the review to use the name of the Cornell Review.
But is it online?
Yes,
it should be
online. Oh, I can check online. You don't have to look. I can
send it, and I can send it out. I've leave some notes at home about the whole resolution.
I can find it online.
But basically, the gist of it is that it's saying that, you know, we as a student assembly feel that these words are not necessarily supportive of the community, the ones that we're trying to promote. It's not supportive of diversity of opinion, diversity of skin color, or things of that nature. And then it says at the end, the last, be it therefore resolved that there will be established a committee to work with the different assemblies in the university, as well as community members, students, and administration members, to figure out exactly what is hurtful to community and to help prevent future bias related incidents.
Did you say a law professor said Cornell was private?
A law professor came and spoke to the student assembly about Cornell's right as an institution, a private institution as a school.
But it's also public,
it
so
is.
It's both.
Actually, I had an issue with that matter last semester, trying to find out whether Resolution 17, which dealt with concealed carry on campus, applied the same way to the endowed colleges as the private colleges. And I spoke with a couple of people, including the dean of the ILR school, and he confirmed to me that ILR and the other endowed colleges are still private property and they're part of a private institution, although they are partially endowed by the state. So
it's like an umbrella, a private umbrella over public institutions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not technically a SUNY school.
Okay.
And that's defined by a certain proportion, like if they are under a certain proportion of that.
I don't know exactly how it worked out, but I mean, I think anyone who pays ILR tuition is certainly
not
by public.
I think it deals with the charter and how it was granted.
Okay.
Well, I understand that there are different.
All the facilities are also privately owned, and they're not owned by the state. So that might also partner.
Cornell's a private institution.
If anyone would like the resolved clauses of that resolution, I have it pulled up. Be it therefore resolved that the student assembly believes that recent articles in the Cornell Review are inconsistent with the values of Cornell's statement on diversity. Be it further resolved that the student assembly recommended that the Office of the Dean of Students review the Cornell Review's compliance with Policy 4.10 and report its findings to the student assembly within a reasonable period of time.
It
said this was the final version.
Okay, that needs to be changed. That's not the final version because I know for sure that's but I can send that out later on as soon as I get back to my door. But basically, the whole essence is that there is established a committee that's going to be reviewing the administration members, community members, and students. The idea of presenting bias on campus, how it may or not affect, how words may or may not affect students on campus, and their ability to succeed or to stay on campus.
I never read the Cornell Review until this came up, and I didn't read the issue that was the inflammatory one. I read the one afterwards. Some of the articles were okay, some were stinky, and but my feeling for free speech is strong. My support of free speech is really high, even if I personally don't like the free speech from what's been said. And I wonder if the student assembly considered condemning individual articles as opposed to the whole newspaper. And I realize you don't want to spend your time writing resolutions on individual articles.
Mm-hmm. That did not come up. I'm not saying it's a specific article. It was written 3 years ago, and they have invigorated it or brought it into this newest update, and from my perception of how things were interpreted, we're interpreting this as this is part of your magazine, so it's your whole sort of newsletter. So we're not going to separate the package. This is the package. It's the whole thing. We're no thing.
Actually, some community members did bring up that idea, but it wasn't well received by the sponsors of the resolution. They felt that the review as a whole was insulting and should be condemned.
Board members, go ahead. Here's what actually worries me. Okay, I play the devil's advocate because I'm pro-choice, although I don't like abortions, so they're there. But if somebody were to say, if there were articles about pro-choice in the Cornell Sun, and someone were to say, you're advocating killing, that's the most against diversity thing you can do, and I wouldn't want to see the argument go that way. So I'm willing to protect the jerks on the other side to make sure that only that nobody just writes stories about the colors of flowers.
And just in addition to the example that Randy's giving out, I'd like to give also another example that I think lends itself well to specifically how this is being handled, and that's just as an example, the situation that's going on right now with Acorn, where there are a lot of people in the association for registering people to vote, and it deals with a very specific population of the country, and there's this huge issue right now that there's a lot of fraud going on with the registration, and people are saying that they should punish the entire organization for the act of fraud. And the organization itself is condemning the acts of these few. But people who don't like the organization are attacking the entire organization, saying it is a fundamental problem within the organization. It seems very similar to what's going on here with the review. That there's an issue that happened with an article or two or several, and now there's a group that's saying the entire review is problematic. And that might not be the case. So perhaps consider that it is isolated, maybe not completely contained, but isolated to a number of bad choices or bad submissions that were published, and that perhaps it's not the entire review that is problematic. I mean, it has a history, and everybody makes bad decisions, and everybody gets angry, or everybody makes bad comments once in a while, but it would be a shame to punish an entire organization for the bad decisions of a few.
Well, the article was also written 3 years ago, so I think that that speaks to your statement, but the group who brought the resolution and the sponsors of the resolution were really adamant about seeing something done immediately.
And it's important to recognize, is the resolution coming from a place of anger, or is it coming from a place of well-thought-out protection of the student body? And it seems as though it really did have a lot of emotion behind it and not a whole lot of objective, analytical process into the point of why you pass resolutions and the point of why you condemn certain organizations. Because it would be more damaging to condemn an entire organization when really it's just a problem with a couple of people.
I would agree with that. I actually propose that we take some time and put together an entirely new resolution as opposed to adapting the current one. But that was an idea that was met with a very, very poor response. So I think that you're most likely correct and that a lot of the resolution came from anger and came from, you know, just a lot of emotions that were going through people at that point, especially if you look at the original version of the resolution and the final version, which were completely different resolutions. So it was clear that people wanted to see something passed, and they weren't as clear on exactly what would be the best thing to pass.
Are we now considering a possibility of having a resolution from the UA about this?
Can I mention one thing?
The reason I want to bring this up is that if there's a productive end to this discussion, it would be that. Right. Otherwise, we're just giving advice, basically, to the student assembly, which doesn't make much sense from the UA. And I'm not saying that in any pejorative or, you know, negative sense. I'm asking whether that's what is being asked for in this.
And I sort of have a question also that sort of relates to that. I thought you guys were wanting to amend the campus code of conduct in that resolution you guys passed.
Yes. Apparently, the version of the resolution that's listed on the Ascendance website is final, is not correct. It's being informed me. So he'll be sending everyone else the resolution, and it actually created a committee to review the problem.
And not directly asking for the campus code of conduct to be read.
I believe it asked the committee.
It asked that the committee, basically, so going back again to the time issue and sort of how that, you know, part came to be. Some students wanted immediate action. Other students, representative staff, wanted that, you know, wanted to wait a week, 2 weeks, see what we can come together with a resolution. I guess I can speak because this is my basically my amendment was the fact that we can combine the two. I think.
Combine what two?
The two ideas of immediate action versus long action, because this is not necessarily doing anything immediately. It's getting all minds, potentially members of the review, potentially other Republicans, potentially students that are hurt, to come together and think about what is the sort of thing that we can do and how can we proceed. So that committee is the beginning of this dialogue, which can extend over time. And in response, I mean, I understand what you're saying, how we have to be careful about how we, you know, attack a few or this is a bad article. But I think the perception that was gotten from the rest of the students of the assembly is that when you are representative of an organization, you are representing the whole. And so that is something that needs, when it's coming out, whether it be from a specific article, this is representation of the whole, and people see that. So for example, another example could be, you know, how do we judge things? There are a lot of things that can go along that way. That's just the way I think it was taken, as a representation of the whole. And students on the assembly did feel that the Cornell Review, whoever is in charge of the board in bringing this back together, decided to bring this article out, and therefore it is responsible of the views of many, not just the views of just one person. That's just the opinion. Again, we can get into debate, but.
If we have a resolution or if we have anything that has to do with campus code, I think we would get into a debate which would bring all of our views as individual representatives of our different areas. But right now, we're just in the discussion phase, and the discussion phase would be useful and necessary if this was directly related to a proposal from the student assembly or individuals in the student assembly to the campus code, the codes and judicial committee, to consider amending the campus code, or if it was a proposal directly to the UA to have a resolution in support of something the student assembly is doing. Mm-hmm. I think in either of those cases, we would have a continuation of this as a debate matter would be called for.
Sure. So I think definitely we can go to drawing boards. I mean, we could start now, depending on all the things that need to be done. But I think I was just asked to sort of bring up as a continuation of the report of the essay,
sure,
what we have been doing, and we can then go from there as to our own response or members' response.
Feel free to bring it as a resolution, but feel free to bring it to the campus to the CJC. But if you bring it to the CJC, then having a debate beforehand, because we have to pass resolutions having to do with the campus code of conduct, even if the CJC approves it.
Yeah, I just want to say I agree with what you're saying, Marty, because all of us around the table, I know certainly I do, I have some things that I would like to share as well, but I don't know if this is the right place to do it, because, depending on the purpose that you're bringing that to us, but you're just informing us of the status.
Right.
But if you're asking us for an action, I agree with Marty.
Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily ask. Marty asked me to touch on this update.
Okay.
So I didn't even put this on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, depending on where we want to go from here, I guess, we'll merit action in the future or not.
Who's going to talk about that?
We have 10 minutes left. We want to skip into this and then.
Yeah, but who was going to talk about
it? It was going to be just a general kind of. Alex was going to bring up initial CSM. Could you actually, because we have about 10 minutes left, and I'd like to spend a little bit of time to discuss people's thoughts because that's more of a pressing matter. Could you send out the minutes that you had from the panel about the Amethyst Initiative?
Sure.
Okay, so what he's going to be sending out is minutes from the essay panel on the Amethyst Initiative, which kind of read over, give you an overview of it, and we will hold that discussion off until either next time or a meeting sometime in the year.
Yeah. And also, they had a video camera there. I don't know whether we're going to do it with the video online.
Oh, that's
true.
Probably
going to
be up on Cornell.
So there should be a video of it somewhere.
And what is this again?
This is the Amethyst. It's talking about lowering the drinking age.
Oh,
initiative, which I know you had expressed interest in. I appreciate it. So without further ado, then, Randy, would you like to tell us where we're at? Which we had, for those of you who are not aware, we had put together an ad hoc committee to consider PeopleSoft. We had met with Susan Murphy's office, got very positive news from them, and became confident that someone is indeed steering the ship and the issues are being handled, at least as far as we can tell, and where we are now.
And we got together a survey and called the various colleges and schools and asked them to give us the names of a few people from each college and school that's using PeopleSoft, so we can ask them if they think it's meeting their expectations and their needs. And then Rodney learned that there was another survey that was being done from Susan Murphy's office, so he asked us to wait and get the results. I'm anxious, not necessarily to get the results, but to get what their survey was and who was surveyed, so we can make plans on deciding whether we should send out our survey, whether it's a duplication of results or a duplication of efforts or something that's also required. But Susan Murphy's out of town, so we're...
No, she's not out of town. I just don't think she hasn't responded to that, because I made the request.
This afternoon, I will pass her.
Well, will you ask her?
And the request has been made to Susan, and she hasn't gotten back. But she said she would have the results by next Monday. So.
And that's where we stand, or where we stand.
Anything else?
Yeah, I want to actually put a good word for anger. That I'm happy that people get angry over injustices and unfairnesses and all that. But when it comes to resolutions,
it's good to take that anger and let it
make it constructive.
What's that?
Make it constructive.
Make it not constructive.
Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Oh, before I just want to mention something real quick. I was at a conference, the National Organization, the International Conference for the National Organization of Minority Architects in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill at the Hyatt from October 1st through 5th. And with me was 12 Cornell students who are architects and one student who's planning, undergrad in planning. But anyway, out of the 12 students competing in the student design competition, again, Cornell students won first prize. And this is the third consecutive year in a row that they've won. They won last year. Disney was the corporate sponsor in Orlando. They won there. And 3 years ago, they won first prize in San Francisco. So I just wanted to mention that.
Anything else? Motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.